are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
And welcome to Max and Friends. Oh my God, I haven't been here in forever. My mic was just up in there. I had to pull it down closer. So welcome everybody to Max and Friends. You know, I had my summer break and school is back in session, so to say. So we're back on air on LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. I'm shame on you. Where have you been for the last 6 years? Because I've been here every Sunday night. But listen, follow me on Twitter at Max Tucci because we've got a show tonight. We're going to talk about everything from Zimmerman to sex, to dating, to how you could marry a millionaire, to, oh my goodness, all the wonderful things we're talking about tonight. We've got some wonderful guests tonight. Hunter Cross is back. We've got Miss Ali. Stay tuned for that, because that's going to be good. And we also have Abby Diaz coming up. She's a freelance commercial artist, design, dressmaker, and restaurant consultant, and she's got a new book, and we're going to talk about it. Speaking of newness, everybody, it's a new season here on Max and Friends. I'm glad you're joining us. We're into our 12th season. Can you believe it this year? This night, tonight here on LA Talk Radio, if you haven't gotten a chance to, go to the App Store, both on Apple, the Mac Store, and also the Play Store, and get your LA Talk Radio app. It's free. You can stream so many wonderful shows, and of course, my show, Max and Friends, every Sunday night. You can take me to bed with you, hop up in that bed, press app, channel one, and listen to me live every Sunday. A lot of promotion going on here tonight for Max and Friends because we're excited to be back. I'm excited to be back. I know, Hunter Cross, you're excited to be back. How you doing, Hunter?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's been a while. Summer's over. School's back in session, so you know what that's all about. Crazy stuff has happened, too, while I haven't been on air. And you know how many times, while Tamara, I've got to say thank you so much to Tamara and Greg for holding down Max and Friends here. They gave you some good love advice, didn't they? Before we continue, I just got to send my love and prayers to everybody in Colorado. Y'all know that we have a house out there, and whew, there's some crazy stuff going on. Biblical proportions, they say. The floods are coming. Well, thank God the house looks like an ark, because I tell you, there's some crazy stuff going out in Boulder. But keep your thoughts and your prayers to Boulder, and keep your thoughts and prayers to Princess Janae. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But as we've been away, there's been so many times I wanted to call into my own show, and I did, but I couldn't talk about Hot Topics. I was so upset because there was some crazy stuff with Zimmerman. Now, you know, we've had his brother here on the show. We've talked about it. We had an open discussion on what everybody thinks. So while we were on break, you know what happened was that he got into a scuffle with his wife. Allegedly, there was a gun involved, a pocket knife, an iPad was broken. So much nonsense going on. The press has been going on saying that he is just a time bomb waiting to explode, people have said. People have also said that he is like the next Sandy Hook. What do you all think? Tweet me, at Max Tucci. Well, we've got Miss Ali here tonight. She is a self-proclaimed mother of the Black Book explosion of the 1990s when she released her blockbuster bestseller, The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman, and the sequel. She is also the author of Are You Still a Slave? And How Not to Eat Pork, and Urban Survival, and How to Tell If Your Man is Gay or Bisexual. She had a starring role in the popular Hidden Colors DVD and is a current social commentator on HLN Dr. Drew. That's where we found her. And when I saw her, oh my goodness, I was like, we got to have her, Max and Friends. And you all agreed. So without any further ado, let's give some love to Miss Ali. Welcome to Max and Friends, and pull up your mic.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here. Now, Hunter Cross, you know, while I was away, I've been tweeting you about this nonsense going on with Zimmerman. So I'm going to turn over the mic to you, and you tell us what's going on and your thought. And Miss Ali, feel free to jump in at any time. Everyone be respectful. Let's not be like The View and let everyone have their time to talk. All right, Hunter, so hit it. What's going on?
Well, it looks like that he's gotten himself into hot water again because he and his wife apparently are having some marital issues, and they had a marital, you know, everything that happens with him now is news. You know, things that happen to other people every day that no one even notices. If it happens to George Zimmerman, now it's news. So for him, he and his wife ended up having a controversy, and she thought he had a gun. She thought he was going to pull a gun. There's a question of whether he actually had the gun or not. But anyway, as it turns out, no one's pressing charges, and so it's kind of probably going to blow over.
Well, what do you think, Miss Ali? Because I know you've got a lot to say about this.
Well, I think, you know, I've mentioned before that I think that Zimmerman has the self-accusing spirit. You know, there's something about when you do certain things that are so wrong, we tend to have a lot of Freudian slips. We want to get caught, or we'll do things that we say is an accident, you know, but he says there are no accidents. And so a lot of times he's doing things now that I think that he wants to be punished. Don't forget, he's a very religious guy. And that, you know, he made that clear way up in the beginning. And so he's got some feelings about the fact that he killed this young man and that he knew that he was the one that was in the wrong. And the problems that he's having with his wife, that's not new. That probably didn't just start. What got them back together was that, of course, his attorney asked her to start showing up to look supportive, like they always ask a wife to do. Plus, when that money started coming in, that got her a little more interested then, you know. And
well, money is a mood changer. Money is a mood changer, you know. And I've got to tell you, the one thing that I just had to point out, and I was so eager to call in on my own show when I was on break, was, you know what, apparently he's got a new girlfriend. So you know where this money's going to buy her stuff. So, of course, the wife is getting pissed. Now, of course, these are all just, you know, make-believes in my head, but this is what I think is going on. And the wife is irrelevant. The case, you know, people are still talking about it, but she's irrelevant to the case, and she wants her money, too. She wants her book deal. So I think she's just getting out there right now. They made this up together. I don't even think they're pissed at each other. And I think they're just getting this scuffle to get media attention, to get people like us talking about them, so she can get her book deal. What do you think, Miss Ali?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think she's going to get a book deal anyway because they want people to tell, you know, they want her to tell, you know, what their life has really been like, his behavior, you know, because he's a little psychotic and a little paranoid, a little schizophrenic. He got a lot of things going. But I think that the wife is always relevant as long as she's married to him. She's going to have some say-so about how things go. But I agree with you. I think it's right that the money issue. Everybody know you give the money to the new woman if a man is going out with somebody, you know. And so his wife is saying, oh, no, hell no, it's not going to go like that. Not when I have stood behind you and took all of your nonsense and went along with this game. You're going to have to, you know, give me some of the money. And I think at this point she's willing to try to get it all if she can defame him enough. Not saying that he didn't do some things, but if I'm in the black community, all I have to do is call the police and say some man threatened me. He ain't got to touch me. He ain't got to have no knife, no gun, no nothing. And they're going to take him to jail.
Hunter,
and
what do you think about
Zimmerman
that?
Zimmerman has done it again. But I tell you one thing he did that I had mentioned way early on. When you have a permit to carry, and if you run into or talk to any kind of interaction with a police officer, you have to inform them that you have a gun. Okay? Well, he's doing that now. The prosecution should have used that because it would have proved intent and premeditation. But this time when they stopped him, the first thing he told that police is that, hey, I got a gun.
Hunter, what do you think?
Well, you know, to me, George Zimmerman and his personal life are the least possible interesting things in the news to talk about. I think that if we want to talk about George Zimmerman and how the media and how the general public responded to the case and talk about race relations, talk about the criminal justice system, perhaps maybe talk about how the races are treated differently when maybe the same crimes occur or the alleged same crimes occur. To me, that's fascinating. But George Zimmerman and his wife and their marital tiffs and him sitting in the car stewing over whether something she said or whatever, to me, that's the least interesting thing. I mean, they could be any other couple anywhere having marital difficulties, and one of them calls the cops. I don't know how many cops...
But hold on, Hunter. Called. Hunter, just like Miss Ali said, if this was a black woman calling the cops, the guy would have been arrested. Why wasn't he arrested?
That's right.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt, and that's what I'm saying, is that there's no question that in the United States, that if you're black, the police treat you differently than if you're white. That happens to be just a fact, and it's something that needs to change, and it's something that we as a society need to work on. But, you know, why Zimmerman? Zimmerman is no different than any other white guy who didn't get arrested when his wife called and said that he's, you know, threatening me. That probably happens a lot, and I would venture to guess, and I don't have any evidence, you know, to back this up, but I don't doubt Miss Ali's conclusion that if this had been if this had taken place, maybe not just necessarily with a black person, but if this had taken place perhaps in a neighborhood where the police are accustomed to violence and what have you, maybe because it's a primarily black neighborhood with where there happens to be a lot of violence, maybe the guy would have been arrested. I don't have any doubt that that's probably true. But that doesn't. George Zimmerman is not the poster child for white people. Suddenly, he's not the guy who. Oh, look, they treated him differently again. No, they're treating him like they do the other white people, and that's the root of the problem. Not just that he's George Zimmerman.
I think that another test that, as black people, that we have failed is that, you know, for so many years, Max, we have went around talking that stuff about we are the people of color. If you're black, brown, red, or yellow, oh, that's a person of color. Well, you know, actually, George Zimmerman is passing. He looks white because he has a white father. But in America, you get your birthright from your mother.
Mm-hmm. In a lot of other countries, too, because if you're Jewish and your mother's Jewish, you're Jewish.
That's right. I'm saying, you know.
And that's international.
And so, and I saw his uncle, who is a brown man, and then I saw his grandfather, who looked like Kunta Kinte. So, you know, Zimmerman is not really that white, because
Barack Obama is a white man by that definition.
But Barack Obama doesn't look white. Zimmerman does.
I don't know that Zimmerman
doesn't
look all that white
either. Just mentioned the fact about that he's just treated like any other white man, so I was just explaining that he's really not white in that sense. But in the black community, we have not embraced his ignorance and his the things he's done wrong like he was a brown man. So I'm saying we failed that test. We really are not in love with the brown and the yellow and the black and the red man. We're not in love with all of them like we have said, because if we were, we would give him the same pass for homicide like we do in our own community.
Now, Miss Ali, what do you think the black community needs to do in order to embrace all the different shades of African Americans?
I don't think there's anything we can do, because we have racial prejudice inside our own groups, too. We're still dealing with issues about hair. We're dealing with issues about light skin and dark skin. So there's nothing we're going to do about that but continue to keep this fraud up that we love everybody. We don't love everybody. Mm-hmm. The only people we really love is white people. The only people we really admire is white people. The only people our men want to be with is white women. So, you know, that's really, we just have a little fraud going. But it's something that we're used to now. This is how we play it. And then we just say things in public because it sounds good. Like I say, that people of color, that's a little slogan that sounds good, but there's no validity in it.
You know, I think that Ms. Ali is right. I mean, I was at at one of these churches where they claimed to be open for all types. And they had a panel discussion where they were trying to embrace people of all types. And, you know, to me, they were all so full of nonsense. They were trying to suggest that the Christian on the panel and the Hindu on the panel and the Muslim on the panel all talk of love and bond among people. Meanwhile, that's easy to say if you want to say that your religion talks about love for all. Meanwhile, let's talk about what they really think. Let's talk about who they really hate. Then we'll talk. Then we'll learn the distinctions and the differences. So, yeah, I agree with you, Miss Ali. You know, sometimes we like to sugarcoat things and say that, we're all one, you know, but we're not. And we need to face facts that we're not. And we treat each other differently. And we need to get to the root of what's different so that we can try and and deal with it and learn to understand people, not try and make believe we're all the same, because we're not.
Just in our own community where, you know, we're constantly saying, you know, if we could get together, we could have unity and we could do this and that if we had unity. But the actual fact is that you can't have unity without uniformity. And
that's
all
right.
We brag about on the one hand is that we're not monolithic. Well, you can't have unity unless you're monolithic about certain basic ideas. And we don't have that. And
those
are things that, you know, it's just all of it is oppositional thought. We're going to have unity, but then we're going to all be different.
Well, that's right. And these people who are standing on this pulpit trying to suggest that we should understand each other, what they really should have been saying, you know what, Mr. Muslim, I don't understand how you can sit here and speak about love when you say that if I don't accept your God that I am going to die or I'm going to go to hell. And how come the Christian on the panel can say the same thing for them? Well, if you haven't accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior, you're going to hell. Well, that they didn't talk about all that.
Well, you know, that's a good point, too. I mean, this here topic, it could just go farther and farther because actually there have been more people killed on the earth because of religious differences than for racism.
Right.
Racism is just the biggest deal here in America because we were used to build this country and to do so many things, and then the white population decided that we were some kind of threat, and they had to dismiss the black man, and so, you know, that created all of the racism in regard to the killing and leaving out of jobs and all of those types of things. You know, these are old issues and old grievances.
Well, we have very short memory in this country. We have a very short memory.
We have selective amnesia.
We talk about wanting to go to Syria because the Syrian government used chemical weapons against innocent children. Well, what about the time after time that the United States government used chemical weapons against we dropped bombs with chemical weapons on the Germans during World War II. We used chemical weapons against the Koreans. We used chemical weapons against the Vietnamese every day for years. How do we say straight face?
Well, we're also using chemical weapons against the American people. When you buy any food in this country now, you have 50, 75, 100 different miscellaneous chemicals on them that are causing us all kind of medical problems. And these chemicals are disguised as food and flavoring. So we're using chemical weapons on our own people here, which is causing them to have heart disease.
That's a whole other story.
It just goes further and further. It just gets bigger and bigger.
Well, you know what? Then let's just transition to there because the Zimmerman story, Miss Ali, what do you feel? Let's wrap up that story and then we can talk about the American warfare here with food. But let me ask you, Miss Ali, what do you think is really going to happen here now with Zimmerman?
I don't think that the law is going to do anything. He's already got that passed. And don't forget his father being that white judge. That would help anybody. I need his dad to be my father if something happened to me, you know, because he's able to get his child off. Police don't arrest each other's children. That's just an unspoken, you know, rule that they have. And so I don't think anything's going to happen with him from any of the public. He's going to do whatever it is to himself. As I said, we're all just going to watch him implode and see what happens, but it's going to just be him. Plus, you know, there's something about when a person gets out in the media and get all that attention, and especially if he's got, you know, already different complexes of inadequacy and not being good enough, not being successful. You know, here this guy, his father is a judge, so obviously they have a high standard for scholarship and achievement in their family, and he ain't did anything, you know. So he got some issues already he working with, and he has not, you know, been able to make his mark or be successful except by killing somebody. And so that's going to be real hard for him to get back to a regular life after getting all of that media attention and a lot of people helping him, which has made him kind of think he's kind of like a rock star. So nothing is going to really happen except we're going to all watch him and talk about him and discuss it. But he's going to do whatever is going to be done to Zimmerman. He's going to do it to himself.
He's going to, No, I agree. What do you think, Hunter?
I think that George Zimmerman is going to fade away and be a footnote. And we'll talk about that case, I think, because the case brought up a lot of issues that this country has really not even yet addressed. That why this man is allowed to carry a gun, why so many people are allowed to carry guns. I mean, gun control, I think, should be what the conversation that's had when Zimmerman comes up, but we don't. Instead, we made it a racial issue, which, you know, I understand why people perceive it that way, and I'm not saying it wasn't, but I'm saying that there is a bigger issue here about gun control and who's carrying guns. Why is a guy like him carrying a gun? But I think as far as a person is concerned, he's really just a sideshow right now, and whatever's going on in his life is going to be his own private hell, and I think that's the way it should stay.
Miss Ali, what do you think about the whole stand your ground?
Well, I think that I don't think any of us will be alive long enough to get it repealed. I think that, you know, in this country, the one rule of the Constitution is in the Bill of Rights. I can't remember. I get it, all the white people's laws mixed up. But anyway, black people believe in freedom of speech. That's all we talk about, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. I can say what I want to say. Well, white people believe in the right to keep and bear arms, okay? And so there's no point in having that argument about guns, brother. We could talk about that forever, but nothing is going to happen there. I mean, zero, zit, zilch, nothing. You know,
nada.
nada, right, yeah. You know, nothing is going to happen regarding gun control. No white man is going to take a gun from another white man. Oh, man, they even look like he white. That's the man whose father is white. None of that's going to happen, you know. And that's so, it's a more productive conversation to discuss maybe the racial issues. I've been almost single-handedly able to bring that forward in this country so that now it's everywhere more so than it was. But to talk about gun control, now you're talking about a waste of time. That really is one, because nothing is going to happen about that.
You know, I got to tell you.
Absolutely nothing.
I got you with that, but I got to tell you, we did a show here with Rolanda Watts, Felonious Monk, and Hunter Cross not too long ago. It's in the LA Talk Radio archives, and we brought up the whole race issue. Hunter's white, I'm white, Rolanda's black, and Felonious Monk is black, and we just had this whole conversation. And I got to tell you, I'm going to bring it up again. Miss Ali, years ago, I was driving from New York down to Virginia Beach, and we were in North Carolina, and I had my good friend Sharon with me. She's from London. Her family's from Kenya. And she's black, and when I walked into the store, some white guy came up to me, and he said, down here, we don't tote niggers. I almost died. I was like, I'm from New York. I looked at Sharon. I said, Sharon, get in the car. We got to go. And I got to tell you, I looked for his gun rack, and I was like, I can't believe that this was like maybe 2007, that somebody was talking to me like that. And I'm from New York, and here I'm saying we're just trying to enjoy Virginia Beach.
No, that's right now. You know, there are a lot
that
of cities.
Still right
I mean,
now.
Atlanta, Chicago, a lot of places. You have to stay way up inside the city if you want to have all of that social integration going, because if you get a step outside of those areas, you find out about the real world, and everybody is not with that, and they will tell you that they are just not with that.
And, you know, I got to tell you, because growing up in New York and having a lot of black friends and, in the you know, a lot of influence from dear friends and from growing up, it was the first incident that I ever experienced. So for me, it blew my mind that I was thinking, who is this person telling me? I just couldn't get over it. And the sad fact is that it happens every single day to not only the black community, the white community, the Asian community, whatever race you are. What is it that we can do to get people? We got to just bang some heads together.
You don't have to bang them for most of the black men who are successful in this country, because almost every black man in our community, if he can get $10, the next thing he want to have is him a white woman, an Asian woman, or a Filipino woman, you know, and that's really unfortunate, but it is part of the success package to a black man in America. You know, he want to get a house, get a contract, either with the sports or the movie industry, and then he want to get a house and a car and a boat and a white woman. It's in the success package. It's a kit, and you get that kit when you get enough money in this country, you know, and so it's sad because, you know, our daughters, granddaughters, they have to sit around and watch all of the eligible, handsome, rich men be taken up and taken over and take their money into the white community. And they don't want women who look like their mothers. They want women who look more exotic and like other people, you know. So that was another lie, that black is beautiful. Black men don't think so, not in the bedroom.
So what happened to the black of the berry, the sweet of the juice, Miss Ali?
All of those are sayings, you know. Okay. All of those are just sayings. I'm telling you, that's all sayings. You know, that's like right on.
Okay.
You remember that?
How you doing?
Yeah, but right. You know, that's like... Hey, word.
That's the truth. But you know what's funny is that if he's good looking and rich too, then you know what? You got to get Miss Ali's book, How to Tell If Your Man Is Gay or Bisexual. Because he might
hey,
be
I found out
too.
About that too. Yes. Listen, I found the truth out about that too, Max. I put that book out. Oh, I was so dedicated and so sincere. Oh, I just, well, this was before, you know, the gay community got so touchy you couldn't discuss anything, you know. Mm-hmm. But after I put that out, I thought women, and black women in particular, were going to just beat a path to the bookstore to get that. Oh, they didn't. Their attitude was, I don't care. That's not my business. And I was so surprised about that, you know.
But you know
and
why,
so
Miss Ali? Because you were ahead of your time. The book is relevant right now. It's relevant right now.
I've always been ahead of my time for some reason. You're right. I'm way out before those topics get to be, you know, the real issue. And so by the time they are, I'm no longer interested in it. You know?
Right. And then they're wishing they bought the book. But give us one tip in the book how women can know if their men are gay or bisexual.
Well, sometimes it's, of course, it's, you know, who they hang out with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the type of physical contact they have with men. I remember once when I first started thinking about this, I went out to dinner. And believe it or not, it was out to dinner with Don Lemon. And it was in Philadelphia at a Caribbean restaurant. My husband and I were there, so he came over and started talking to me, saying, hey, you know, I used to see you on television years ago, and I got one of your books. And we started talking. And he was with a guy, and that was, you know, nothing wrong with that. He was two guys, two brothers together. And we sat down at the table, and their elbows were touching. And I recognized men don't touch elbows. And so on the way home, I mentioned it to my husband. I said, did you notice that their elbows was touching at the table? He said, no, I didn't see that. I said, yeah, well, they were. I said, I think something's going on there. And he said, oh, that's your imagination. I said, okay. And then, of course, later on, I found out that wasn't my imagination, but that's one of the ways. Men don't invade each other's space like that. You know, they'll, you know, do that handshake. Y'all will bump shoulders, or even if y'all do the chest bump or something, you know, slap hands or palms. But as far as sitting down and having your elbows touching at the table or your shoulders next to each other, men don't do that.
That's the red flag, right? The elbows touch, the red flag comes up. Well, if you all want to know more, go get the book,
right,
How
there.
To Tell If Your Man Is Gay or Bisexual by Miss Ali. You can get it on Amazon.com. Miss Ali, it's been a pleasure having you on. I hope you join us again. We'll have you on for Hot Topics because you're just a handful of fun, and that's what we need is some fun up in here.
Well, you know, I try to explain it in an entertaining way, but, you know, the things that I discuss, Max, they are very significant.
They are.
To this culture and to what we're going through and how we're going to survive everything that's going on because the worst is yet to come.
Well, before we leave, give us some advice that's inspiring.
Well, what I can say that's inspiring is that for us as black people, I believe in, you know, the freedoms that, you know, we all cherish and want to have. But I think black people should stop forcing themselves into places where they're not wanted. I don't think that our major goal should be to integrate everything in the world. I think that we should return to some of our own structures and create things where other people are trying to come into instead of us constantly trying to come into somebody else's program.
Well, Hunter, what do you have to say to that?
I think that, you know, she raises a great point. I think that we should welcome each other, people who are of different stripes, let's say, whether it's color or gender or sexual orientation. We should welcome people into our spaces and share our experiences with them, but I don't think we all have to be the same. I don't think we all have homogenize ourselves to please everybody. We just have to be willing to accept that people are different and and enjoy the differences. And I think that would be a lot happier if we didn't judge. Because I think that the religious bit really falls apart where you try and have unity because of the judgment. That it's ingrained in the philosophy of many religions that if you don't abide by what we believe, you are wrong and you will suffer as a result of God's wrath. If we just believe that we believe and we all believe in God and whether we believe one way or another, it's all fine, and we just kind of share it without judgment, everyone will be a lot happier.
All right. Well, I'm a lot happier that I have Miss Ali and Hunter Cross and Max and friends. You both have a wonderful night, and we're going to have you all back
okay.
real soon.
Okay. Listen, good thank night. You for inviting me.
Mm-hmm. My so pleasure. Bye. Thank you, Miss Ali. Thank you, Hunter Cross, for joining us. Ronan, I think we're alone now. And when we're back, Abby Diaz is here on Max and Friends. Stay tuned, everyone.
That's what they say when we're together. And watch how you play.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I am your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back. Did you all like Miss Ali and Hunter Cross? Well, that was a lot of fun. Oh, my goodness. Well, we've got Abby Diaz here. She's a freelance commercial artist, designer, dressmaker, restaurant consultant. She has worked in the restaurant industry, you know, one of my favorite industries, for nearly 25 years. Can you all believe this? And she's got some scoop. She's been at the Limelight, Palladium, Tunnel, Club USA, Should We Go On, Coffee Shop, Spy Cafe, The Standard in Miami. You know what that's all about. Mercer Kitchen. It goes on and on and on and on. She served as the opening maitre d' for The Park, Smith, and 66. She is proud to have had the opportunity to work under such nightlife. Now, you all know I love Jean Georges, right? Wouldn't that Jean Georges chicken? How you doing? Eric Good. And the list just goes on. Y'all got to Google her, Abby Diaz. Follow her at PXThis. She's got a new book, and we're going to talk about it here tonight on Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. Welcome, Abby Diaz. Pull up your mic.
Hi. Hi. How are you doing?
Well, I'm great that you're here. I'm doing fantastic. Now, your book, PX Me, How I Became a Published Author, Got Microfamous, and Married a Millionaire. Tell us about your book, Miss Abby Diaz.
thank you. Yeah, it's actually a sequel to my first book, which was titled PX This, Diary of the Maitre D' to the Stars. So this is basically the continuation of that story, because a lot of stuff obviously happened since then, because you know, I wrote about real stories. I wrote about the industry and I wrote about real people. So, as you know, and I still live in New York, so a lot of stuff happened. So this is that story. Yeah,
isn't
it was
that
a lot.
Truth?
Yeah, it was a lot to go through. So I just figured I'd keep telling the story, and you know, here it is.
And
you don't really
you
have
are.
To know the first one. Yeah, and here I am. Yes, here I am. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Now, listen, you know, my family owned Delmonico's Restaurant, you know, the big one downtown in New
yes,
York.
Yes, of course, of
so
course.
So that was my grandfather in, like, 1927. He started that. And you know what? I got to tell you, not only did he start that, but you know Cereal from the Cirque. You know, Cereal was a busboy at our restaurant.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and nobody
amazing.
Knows that. You and I need to get together because I need your help on writing my book.
Anytime. Call me up anytime.
So now tell us about your whole life, because 25 years is a, and we're going to talk about this because I just love the restaurant industry, and so do so many of my listeners because they all tune in. And, you know, I talk about it often. So tell us about your 25-year career in this restaurant industry and some of the stuff that you feel comfortable talking about that was a little bit crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, it was a really long, and you know, you say Cereal started as a busboy. Well, I started as a waitress at Pizzeria Uno on the highway in Paramus, New Jersey. So, and I was like 16 at the time. So that was my first job. So I'm not far off from Cereal. And then right after that, I was a cocktail waitress at a little motel lounge next to a gas station on a different highway in New Jersey. So I come a long way since then, thank goodness. Not quite as far as Cereal, I guess, but you know, I still got a little time left, and
that's
I've
right.
pretty
You're
much
still
spent,
young.
Yeah, a little bit, and I've done pretty much everything in between. So I waited tables, and then I went from that to this to that, and I hostessing, and then that eventually led me to my maitre d' position, which you know, that's where all the glamour is. That's where you
that's
make the big bucks.
Hold up. That's where you get the good people.
Yeah.
They're starting investing in you, right?
Yeah.
But now listen, you have your book, PX This. Tell us what PX stands for.
That's French for VIP. So it's technically, it's personal extraordinaire. So it means VIP, basically, but it's supposed to be a little bit of a secret so that, you know, for example, if it's written on the paper in front of you, like if somebody's looking over your shoulder, they won't exactly know what it means, although it's still kind of obvious, but it's, I guess, maybe not as obvious as, like, putting a big star or, like, VIP next
Here's
to somebody's
the thing.
Name.
The yeah. new VIPs don't know what PX means.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like training. But now, right? So, you know, you're known as the maitre d' to the stars. Tell us an exciting story about some of these stars that you run into from a time to time.
Oh my goodness, I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, because there have been so many of them, and, you know, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, people come in and they're pretty famous, so, you know, it's a little bit different than just, you know, your regular person, because, you know, lots of things go a little bit crazy. you know, you have people watching and you know, and the chef's now all nervous and you know, everybody's like distracted and everyone's staring. So it's kind of like, it's a little bit difficult, but you know, it depends on which celebrity is going to handle it which way. And some of them are really cool about it and some of them aren't. And some of them are, you know, casual and chill and laid back, like a Ben Affleck or a Renee Zellweger or a Will Smith or somebody like that is completely, you know, nice and cool and chill about it. But then, you know, you'll get some people are maybe not so nice about it. And, you know, those are the things that are kind of interesting. Well, Russell Crowe is really not nice about it. If you know, he smacks my colleague upside the head with a telephone. I don't know if you know that story. It's a pretty well-known story. Like, yeah, well, that.
I always joked if Naomi Campbell and Russell Crowe had a baby, it would be a nightmare.
Oh my God, that would. And that, imagine the accent.
Cell phones, right?
Yes, exactly. Oh my God.
So
yeah.
Now, why did you choose to self-publish your books?
Because at the time, I actually, you know, it was such a surprise, really, because it came up in conversation with a bunch of people, and then, it just so happens that I had this diary, and it, you know, it was cool because somebody that I knew said that she had some connections and she knew some people, and we should do this. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. And then I had this diary, so I said, well, take a look at this. And you know, they did send. I sent over maybe 30, 40 pages, and you know, there was some stuff that we didn't really see eye to eye on. Like, they wanted me to change some things. And, you know, when it's a diary, it's kind of hard to change stuff if you don't really believe in what you're changing. I mean, you know, obviously I can make concessions. I can compromise. But when it comes to, like, you know, an artistic level, you don't want to give them too much because, you know, that's your diary. That's your work. So, unfortunately, we didn't see eye to eye. And then we parted ways, and then I heard about this whole new thing about self-publishing. I didn't know anything about it, and I thought it was like, hey, why not, you know? And it didn't seem like that big a deal to me at the time, and of course now it's like a whole different story, but, you know, but I didn't really know what I was doing, so maybe that's a good thing, you know? You just dive, and then...
Listen, I love self-publishing, because you own your own rights. You know, I'm doing a book, it's coming out, we're self-publishing it. I just think it's a great outlet for many writers, because everyone's got a story, and I believe that, and that's why I always have guests on Max and Friends here on LA Talk Radio, because the point is, we all have stories, so if you can self-publish it, because a lot of unknowns try to get their books published, and their stories are, if not better, than some of the other people.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. But see, like, my first book came out almost 10 years ago, so it was a completely different story. Now it's so much easier.
Absolutely.
And now it's like, you know, and I think it's amazing because self-publishers have basically, you know, they've shown the naysayers that, you know, it can be done. And not only can it be done, it can be done really easily and really well. And,
absolutely,
you know, so many people have made incredible successes. And this is just the beginning. It's really, you know, it's relatively still young. So imagine, you know, what more can be brought from this. It's really like, it's a really incredible time to be a creative person. I personally
absolutely
think so.
And I'm getting a tweet right now. Excuse me real quick, because I'm getting a tweet, because we've got live people tweeting us right now, at Max Tucci. Thank you guys for tweeting me. The company that I use for self-publishing is called Outskirts Press. So you guys could check them out online. Outskirts Press. Thanks for that question, by the way. But you went from VIP this to VIP me, basically, with your book, right? So,
yeah.
You know, in your book, PX Me, it's released as a 10-volume e-series.
Right.
Tell me why
right.
E-series, because that's really pioneering, because everyone could be anywhere now and read it, right? You don't have to buy it.
Right, exactly. So that's what I mean when I say that, you know, when there's so many more options and there are going to be so many more coming, this is sort of, yeah, it's a relatively new in a way, because it's new for now, but, you know, serials used to come out, you know, apparently it's credited to, you know, Charles Dickens, A Tale of Two Cities. You know, people would line up on the docks and wait for the incoming passengers to hear the story. So, you know, it's an old sort of genre, but it's, you know, the e-books and the Kindles, so it's a resurgence now, and which is an incredible thing. So it's great because, one, it motivates me to really get it done, because, you know, as a writer, it's the discipline, the writing, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And when you put yourself on a schedule and you know people are waiting, it makes it, you know, I'm not going to say makes it easier, but it definitely makes you more disciplined, and then you have to get it out there, and it's better in a way. And then in this way, people can, you know, you have the opportunity to, you know, read one if you like it, great. There's plenty more. And if you decide it's not for you, hey, you only spent 99 cents, you know? So it's kind of like, you know, like it works for both, you know, it works for both people so that you can decide. I think it's a, you know, I think it's wonderful and it's really worked well for me. And I'm really happy I did it. And it makes me excited for, you know, other things that can come. You know, people are talking about, you know, audio books and now adding like right. links that will take you to videos. I mean, like it'll be really like interactive reading. It's crazy, you know.
Oh, so, I love that interactive reading. That's good.
You know, I'm sorry.
Where can people buy your books?
Oh, right now Amazon. The serial is on Amazon because I didn't, you know, I figured let's give it a try. It's for me. It's, you know, it was relatively experimental. But once it's all done, I'm currently volume 8 is out. I'm currently working on volume 9. It'll be a 10-volume series, and then eventually the entire volume of all, you know, the complete edition will be available pretty much everywhere. It'll be Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Powell's, you know, there's a hundred iTunes, obviously. So it should be easy to find. And then also the print version will be available via those outlets as well. So.
You need to get yourself an app.
Yeah, right? I think I do. I think that's a fantastic idea.
Right?
That's great.
I have an app too, the Max Tucci app and LA Talk Radio app, so everyone go get it, because I would say slap my app.
that's great. You know, thanks for that. Definitely.
My pleasure. Absolutely. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to give you a little secret right now. If you go to, I'm going to give you their little email site right now in a minute, but you know, tell me, now, of course, these are like your diaries, so these are personal pages. Do you wish you didn't put any of these personal pages out there about these well-known people?
Well, I mean, yes and no. You know, of course, obviously, when you're doing it, you think a lot about it and whether it's going to be the right thing. And, you know, for me personally, you know, I put what I felt, and but you know, I'm generally not such a wishy-washy person, and I pretty much keep it sort of light in a way. Even when things are bad, you know, I kind of try to, you know, try to shine that up a little bit. I'm always looking for the silver lining in the cloud. So you know, when I put it out there, but you know, I'm clearly not trying to, you know, lose my head over this stuff. And I think everybody goes through that. I think that's something that everybody can empathize with. You know, you got to trudge
the realness
forward.
Yeah, you got to be real. You know what? So if y'all, I want y'all real quick, go to @PXThis, follow her on Twitter, because there you're going to find PXThis on Twitter. And PXMe is the book. Abby Diaz is my guest tonight on Max and Friends. Abby, you got to check out AppsBar, APPSBAR, AppsBar.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much.
Because they are going to hook you up with a free app, okay?
Oh, wow. Really?
Yep, absolutely.
That's amazing.
The first time you're, you know, a friend. The second time you're family. So you got to come back here on to Max and Friends.
Oh,
Talk Radio. And
I would love to.
Listen, it's my pleasure, because we're going to get into some good – we're going to get into the juice one day on all these restaurants. You and I are just going to have an hour about all of the things we know about the restaurant industry, because I got some fun stories to tell you. You know, my uncle is San Domenico in New York. And I've got stories about Madonna and Tupac and back in the day.
Oh, wow. Wait, yeah, you need a book. Okay, so you definitely need one of these. We're going to we'll start writing it all down.
That we will. So I love the whole concept of your book, PX Me, Everybody VIP Me. I'm Max and Friends tonight here with Abby Diaz. And thank you so much for being on Max and Friends.
No, thank you.
And we have to say thank you to Anne Marie for putting us together.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. So tell us real quick what's next for you.
Oh, well, we produced a pilot based on the show. So hopefully PX this series hopefully is on the horizon. We have a great pilot, and you know, we're looking for somebody who wants to pick that up, because it looks really good. That's on YouTube. Obviously, if you Google, you can search YouTube PX This the Series, and you can see the entire, and it's broken up. You can see the trailer, and then the series is broken up into like 6 little 10-minute episodes. So, and it's great. So thank you for asking.
Absolutely. And how can people find you besides Twitter? What's your email?
I'm I'm on Instagram. My email is px.this@gmail, but apparently you don't even need the dot, so px.this@gmail is also fine. And then I'm on Instagram,
PXs,
and Twitter. Yeah. And like,
Google PXs, yeah. Google Abby Diaz. If you want to get in touch with her, you know how, because you heard us here on Max and Friends. If you missed any portion of the show, y'all can go back into our archives and pull it up. Abby, have a wonderful night.
Thank you, Max. You too. Thank you so much.
I'm going to talk to you after the show.
Okay.
All right. All right, everyone. All right, well, we've got to move on here, and I love you all for listening, and thank you for being with me 12 seasons, 6 years of Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Before we go, I just want to send my love and my prayers right now to, obviously, Colorado, but to my dear friend, Princess Janae Banks, who's she's battling cancer right now, but I know that whatever's meant to be will be. And this goes out to Princess Janae, because we need entertainers in our life and people that are real and know how to love and entertain, and she's one of them. So I didn't know my own strength. Next week, we have a great show coming up for you on Max and Friends. We've got, and she's back, Amira Salon. We've got some psychics here on Max and Friends, and Damona Hoffman will be here, dear Mrs. D. Have a great night, everyone. Take life to the max, and this is for you, Princess Janae. I didn't know my own strength on Max and Friends, LA Talk Radio. Good night. Thank you, Miss Ali, Hunter Cross, and of course, Abby Diaz for joining me tonight on Max and Friends.
Lost touch with my soul. I had nowhere to turn. I had nowhere to go. Lost sight of my dream. Thought it would be the end of me.